In the Moment on SDPB is supported by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting the South Dakota Festival of Books, September 20th through 22nd in Brookings.
How healthy is the South Dakota arts ecosystem? We'll hear from the advocates and the artists. From SDPB, this is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, conversations from the 2024 South Dakota Arts Conference. We'll talk with Randy Cohen and Andrew Reinertz. We'll dive into the numbers and stories that support the arts across the country and right here at home. Then, who is championing the arts in South Dakota? Janet Brown and Maren Engel join us for a conversation about advocacy and the power of pursuing a career in the arts. Plus, we talk with local sculptor Cameron Stahlheim about exploring place through art. That's coming a bit later in the hour. We are diving into the power of arts programming, how it shapes us to become the people we are and the people we are becoming. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the Moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Evaluating the value and impact of the arts can be tricky. You can measure economic impact, but arts also offer intrinsic value, personal growth, and community connection. Randy Cohen is Vice President of Research at Americans for the Arts. He specializes in actionable data in the arts industry. His golden rule is no numbers without a story, no story without numbers. Andrew Reinertz is the Community Development Director at Arts South Dakota. The two men stopped by the SDPB studios for a conversation on the impact of art both economically and culturally. Here's our conversation.
What my job has evolved as over the years is really how do you get people the information tools they need to make the case for the arts, to make sure everyone across the state, every community has the opportunity to participate and engage personally. Every child's receiving a quality arts education. And, you know, we're asking people to make decisions and different choices. And so how do we bend the brains, right? And a big way to do that, start with the data, you know, the information first. There's so many great stories and in the arts. Of course, we have to have the great stories. But, you know, you need the numbers, too.
How do those go together? No story without the data.
That's my golden rule. Yeah.
Tell us about that. I think that's fascinating.
My golden rule of advocacy is, you know, no numbers without a story and no stories without a number. And stories are what engage us, and they capture our imagination and they touch us emotionally. And then when you can follow that up with a statistic, you know, that really just hits it home and cements it. And you know, and then the other way to look at it is, you know, without the numbers, you're just another person with an opinion, right? So it's powerful to have both. And of course, we're so lucky in the arts and you know, South Dakota and the communities, it's so arts and culture rich across the state. And, you know, I've been up here a number of times over the years. I've been at Americans for the Arts for 33 years, and I've been coming back and forth, you know, fairly consistently over the decades, and I love it. And it's, I think the arts just really help make this state a livable place to be. It's obviously a huge tourism driver, and which is, you know, good for the economy. And you know, with the study we're talking about primarily today, you know, Arts and Economic Prosperity 6. Everybody loves the arts. I mean, everybody enjoys the arts, and they inspire us, and they make us feel creative, and they create more livable communities. But what folks don't realize is that they're also a business. They are an industry, and it supports jobs, generates government revenue, is a tourism driver. So that's another incredible story we have to tell.
Yeah. How far back does, when I think of data journalism, I think back to, you know, Ida B. Wells just counting things. It doesn't have to have a big algorithm involved in it. How far back do we have information about the arts that you recognize as data-driven decision-making in the arts community?
That is such an interesting question. You know, a lot of the way we look at the data that's always been available is funding data. you know, and so that's one way to track. And I mean, dollars are a proxy for the public's choices and policies and everything. You know, it's in terms of research, though, arts and culture research and community impact. I mean, it's kind of a nascent science compared to, you know, many of the medical sciences. I mean, you could just really look at the last three or four decades, which is where we really saw a huge growth and a crescendo in the amount of arts research. And, you know, I can look back, you know, in my 33 years at Americans for the Arts, and I know in the beginning we all would always say, arts are a fundamental component of a healthy community and a healthy society. But how do you demonstrate that with research? And we couldn't even just 30 years ago. But over the years, we've found that arts, good for the economy, young people in education, rich in the arts, are performing better academically. We just came through a pandemic where mental health issues tripled. Arts, once again, the research showing provides benefits to people's mental health and community well-being, unifying communities. The arts do that. And our returning service members from the military, you know, there's benefits there. And over time, we've found that the arts really do touch all aspects of our society. And there's research that underscores those benefits. And now I think after 30 plus years, we can actually look to the research and say, yeah, the arts really are central to building a healthier community.
Yeah. And a healthier South Dakota, Andrew. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about your organization and how you use something like Arts and Economic Prosperity 6, the report, to figure out what's happening in our home state and how we can apply that data to the decisions people are making across South Dakota.
Yeah, so Arts South Dakota is the state's arts service organization. You know, our goal is really to support the artists and the arts organizations across the state doing all the great work. You know, so we're the part of our dilemma is when we're doing our best work, we're almost the most invisible because we're the, you know, we're kind of the spider web behind the scenes connecting folks to each other and to other opportunities and providing the tools and training for folks to do the artwork and the creative work more effectively across the state. And the way that this study really helps us is as part of our work is advocacy, both at the state and national level. And as Randy mentioned, you know, the intrinsic value of the arts for those of us that have felt that impact as people, sometimes it's almost like, how do you describe breathing air? You know, you can almost be a difficult thing to really quantify and communicate. And some of these data points really help us for decision makers, for policy makers, and then to provide those tools to local communities when they're going to their city councils, when they're going to their county commissions to try to advocate for funding for the arts, or they're going to local, their school boards for arts education, when they're going to funders to provide funding for nonprofit arts, to really have that talking point to catch people's attention. You know, it's not, the data isn't the story, but it's often a great way to start that story. And so our goal is to provide those tools and tactics and strategic support for the organizations really getting down and dirty in their communities and making it happen.
Yeah. How about making art as a form of self-care? You know, singing, playing an instrument, journaling, writing, being in a play with little, you know, teenagers on the block, putting something together and showing their parents, maybe five-year-olds, maybe not teenagers, they're not doing that, but... But my point is, what do you know about the role of art making in mental health?
We were part of an international research study with University of College London, University of Florida, looking at tens of thousands of people in both countries who did these weekly online surveys. And if you're out there, thank you very much. I couldn't have done it without you. Where we asked about people's activities, their health, and all kinds of other questions. And these were just responded to consistently. Short story, what we found is people who had some kind of arts, creative, expressive involvement, a half hour a day, could be going to the arts, making art, culinary, you know, so we sort of took a big umbrella approach here. Half hour a day showed lower rates of depression, lower rates of anxiety, higher rates of life satisfaction. And that was at a time when we were just all our most uncertain. I myself actually took up knitting during the pandemic, and I'd always wanted to try, you know, after I watched everything on Netflix. I didn't want to get off the couch, but I knew I had to try something else. So, I ordered supplies, I did it, and I got to say, you can't knit or practice an art form or play music and simultaneously be stressed out about the uncertainty of the other side of the pandemic. Yeah. It was really one of the few things that took my brain elsewhere. I'm not that good. I make the world's longest scarves, but I had my own personal experience, and so did so many others. And
I needlepointed so many things, Randy. There's so much needlepoint from the last 4 years.
I love it.
And there, you said something there, and I think, Andrew, I'm so excited to hear your thoughts on this, because we're both beginners, mm-hmm. novices in some way. You know, you get a little bit better. Maybe I'm an intermediate now. I don't know. But there was a permission in doing it badly. And then I think about Andrew playing music, and he is not a beginner. He's a very sophisticated, advanced artist. He teaches. Is it the same for you? Can you play mm-hmm. music and disappear into that? Or do you have to find the thing that does not also work for you? The thing that is, you get what I'm asking
yes.
here?
Yes. Yeah. And the answer is yes. To a certain extent, a lot of the music, part of the problem for me with the pandemic is so much of the music that I love. I play with the orchestra, but a lot of my musical output now is in improvised musical forms where you're collaborating with others. Yeah. And as a bass player, even as a bass player, I don't want to hear solo bass for that long. And so, you know, you can only do so much of that. That being said, ideally, when you're a performer, that's when I can be fully present and in the moment and not thinking about the other things. But during the pandemic, when we couldn't be together as easily, I still played a lot of music, got more into writing, but I started playing a lot more guitar. I just sat in the basement, played acoustic guitar because, like you said, I wasn't supposed to be good at it. It wasn't my job. You know, sometimes when I'm playing the thing, I'm, you know, you get a little bit annoyed. You're like, oh man, my thumb position on upright bass should have been better. It used to be better when I was practicing more. Yeah. And you get in your head. But if I'm just sitting around playing some cowboy chords in the basement and writing a song, I'm not supposed to be good at that. And so it's that same kind of experience of losing yourself. And so much, that's the double-edged sword of a creative career for your life, is that it can be difficult to maintain play while playing music, while playing with your art, and keeping that creative spark while also it being a business. Because as Randy mentioned, I mean, you know, whether it's a nonprofit arts organization or an individual artist, the first time you get hired for a gig, the first time you sell a piece to a friend for $10, you're now an entrepreneur and you're a small business owner.
Yeah.
You know, and so keeping that joy and creating a stable career can often be a tension, just like for everybody in every career.
Yeah. Randy, talk about innovation, because also when I look at Andrew, I think as a person who lives here, everything that he does with a new collaboration or a group, if they release a new album, if they're playing live, I want to see them because they are pushing things forward. I want to know what the music coming out of my community is and what it will mean for the rest of the Midwest. So saying that, mm-hmm. I feel incredibly grateful that I have these kind of musicians in my community who are doing that kind of work. Do you measure innovation in the arts in certain ways that I haven't thought of yet?
People are probably thinking about that. I'll say this, the way people have gotten at it sort of in a large scale way is people just clearly value creativity. Mm-hmm. And even the business community, you know, there's a study called Ready to Innovate. It's by the Conference Board. It's the national organization for big business in this country. And their research shows that creativity is now among the top five applied skills that business mm-hmm. leaders are looking for. It's leapfrog the three R's, you know. Well, of course, you have to be able to read, write, and do arithmetic, you know. But if you could take some creativity to your scientific, your engineering knowledge, your coding knowledge, those are the innovation types of jobs we're all trying to attract to our communities. And 72% of business leaders in this research study say creativity is of high importance. 85% of those folks say we're struggling to find the people we're looking for, you know, and there's no typing test for creativity, right? So how do you know if you got a creative person there? The biggest indicators are starting your own company and study of the arts. It's so important then for them, you know, business leaders to be able to attract these creative, innovative workers, because we live in an innovation economy in this world, right? That's how you prosper economically. Workers have made it clear, look, you want me to move to your community. And they're asking, what do we have here in terms of arts and culture and maker spaces? And, you know, is my child going to get a quality arts education? Because you want me to be creative and innovative in the workplace. I'm a creative person and I need that in my life. And so there's a real acknowledgement that this is all connected. And even the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis, top economic shop on the planet, they do something called the Arts and Cultural Production Satellite Account. And what they do is they look at all the arts and culture in the nation's economy. And by the way, this is Department of Commerce says nationally, arts and culture is a $1.1 trillion with a T there to make sure everybody heard that, industry in this country, 4.3% of the nation's economy. The very fact that they even do this study is a statement, because they look at hundreds of industries, but they only do a couple dozen of these satellite accounts, they call them, because it's got to be some kind of economic or strategic imperative here. And it's a statement that we're in an innovation economy. Creativity drives innovation. Arts and culture drives creativity. We come at it a lot of different ways. You know, obviously, teachers know this, you know, and people in the community, and we, you know, the arts make us feel creative. People say that in a public opinion survey. You know, the arts make me feel creative.
Why then, when high school students say, I want to study poetry, I want to study theater, I want to study music, do so many adults say, what are you going to do with that degree, when we know there is an industry in the arts, in advocacy, in finance, in administration, in performing, in behind, you know, back of the house work. We know this is in tourism. We know this is a huge industry. Yet when students really want to deeply study, especially in college, the arts, somebody somewhere is going to say, but what job are you going to get?
Yeah, how are you going to make a living doing that? You know, it's a great question. We've really got to change the mindsets and help people understand that it is. Even just the nonprofit arts and culture industry right here in South Dakota, your museums, your performing arts organizations, your arts education organizations, a $363 million industry that supports 6,054 jobs. And to your point exactly, not everybody who works at a theater is a performer or a musician. You've also, every arts organization's got accountants and auditors. They've got electricians and plumbers and security staff. So these are jobs that touch our whole community. Number one, doesn't matter. So what kind of industry you're in, you are, you know, there's a good chance you're going to benefit from that economic activity. But there are absolutely jobs out there. You know, if you look at all arts and culture, including the commercial and motion pictures and gaming design, right? This is like one of the biggest industries around. And architecture and publishing, if you look at all that, right here in South Dakota, again, this is, you know, the Department of Commerce says it's a $1.4 billion industry in 2022 that supports 14,640 jobs. That's 2% of the state's economy. So if somebody says, oh, you know, we got to focus on industry and business, and you need to focus on your studies on industry and business, you know, it's exactly what you said, Andrew. Arts are businesses. They're small businesses. They're independent entrepreneurs. We have to change a lot of minds.
A
lot of parents, too. You know, we see everybody thinks arts education is so important in, you know, the elementary grades. But once you get to high school, oh, no, we got to focus on, you know, STEM. Well, what about STEAM, right? You know, we got to add the arts to that equation.
That was Randy Cohen and Andrew Reinarts. They stopped by the studio in June when South Dakotans from the arts sector gathered for the biannual arts conference. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. If we want more arts programs, we need more arts advocates. Advocacy has been a longtime role for Janet Brown and a more recent career path for Maren Engel. Janet Brown is a nonprofit arts consultant and former president and CEO of Grantmakers in the Arts. Those are just two of her many titles and accomplishments in the arts ecosystem. Maren Engel is the City of Sioux Falls Arts Coordinator. Maren as well has numerous arts-related credits. Now, Janet and Maren joined me for a conversation at the 2024 State Arts Conference in Sioux Falls. We begin with Janet Brown talking about her path into arts advocacy.
I went to the University of South Dakota as a freshman. I grew up in Del Rapids, so we didn't have a big arts program back when I was in high school. And auditioned with a friend of mine for a production of Hello, Dolly. And we were always singers, you know, good Norwegian Lutheran singers in my family. And I got cast in the chorus. And through that process and the people who were, I found a home. I found a home. At school, and fell in love with the theater, and changed my major from psychology to theater major. They're kind of the same sometimes, but so that's where I started, and that led to this amazing journey that has been my career, which is sometimes I look back and think, really, gosh,
What lit you up about policy and advocacy and research that kept pulling you and production and, you know, touring with companies? Mm-hmm, what made you keep coming back for more and more in those kinds of roles?
I think when I was executive director of South Dakotans for the Arts, and really our role was to help, like Arts South Dakota, to help advocate for funding for the arts and for policies in the state legislature, I realized that there is there's a lot of misinformation about how art is important and how it fulfills quality of life issues in a community. I wanted to promote the fact that government needed to be more involved in the arts, as they were in parks and recreation, as they are in sports and athletic fields and, you know, all of those kinds of issues, and the arts have as much to give. But we're a nation that wasn't really founded on art support. We're a nation founded kind of by people trying to get away from the monarchy, and the monarchy meant artists and, you know, that kind of thing. And so we have a very different kind of de facto policy in this country about supporting the arts. So we're always in the advocacy mode. We're always there. And a lot of early on when I was working with arts councils in the state, I realized that a lot of folks didn't see themselves as powerful in their community, even though they brought, you know, people to community theater and they had gatherings and they were well known, but they didn't see themselves as a political force. And I wanted to change that. So that led to my going back to school and getting a master's in public administration, which is kind of the degree that lets you be a city manager, which is pretty much a joke to me, but me thinking of myself as a city manager. But that's, you know, I wanted to connect those two things. If we're going to grow culturally, we have to have those influences in our state and in our cities and our counties and in our federal government that see this as relevant. And we can only do that by speaking out and stepping up.
Yeah. Maren, what brought you to this place? Because this is the first time the City of Sioux Falls has had your position, as I understand it.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a lot of people to thank for making this position possible, a lot of the people that will be at the conference today, and of course Janet Brown included. And it's a really exciting time in the arts in Sioux Falls, and for this position for the first time to be a priority for the city is pretty special and pretty exciting. There's a lot of momentum, and you know, to your point about being an arts student and getting that question about what can you do with this? It was never a question for me. I went to Augustana as a music major, and my parents, who are very supportive, but had many questions about why is this the route I'm going to go? And I think when you're an artist, it doesn't it's hard to think about anything other than this is what makes me who I am, and it's just what I have to do. And that was my priority in college as well. And it's been exciting to say, I just had a conversation with my parents this week about this is my career now, and I've really stayed the course as an artist, and now I'm getting to do this really special new position to advocate for my community, which is the arts community here in Sioux Falls. Mm.
I started out studying the humanities. That was my declared major, was the humanities. And everybody said, what? What even is that? If I had known then, I could say I will be a public radio host with this job. Right. But I just was interested in taking the classes that I thought I wanted to learn something in. Mm-hmm. So sometimes just following your bliss is not a bad way to begin. However, you also have to think about the data behind the story and the numbers and the research. So, Janet, talk a little bit about, and this is going to be, you know, you're presenting here. We have a live audience here in the Schulte Room where you will be talking to these people about effective advocacy and building partners on a local level for people who couldn't make it to the conference but are listening from rural South Dakota. What makes good advocacy for arts organizations and artists?
It's all about, advocacy is all about, it's like public awareness. It's all about relationship building and understanding how your, what you have to offer, it's a partnership, right? Mm-hmm. So I bring this to the table, and I'm asking you to bring what you bring to the table. So whether that's with city, county governments or state legislatures or whatever, there always has to be this kind of compromise. And and I think one of the things that we learned during the culture wars of the 90s, when before that, because that was a huge shock to us, all of a sudden no more National Endowment for the Arts, everyone wanted to we're going to vote them, we're going to disband them, we're going to, and we never had been really thought of ourselves as either partisan or political. You know, the arts were always a safe space, right? And so so this need to become part of that political system became paramount then. And that's really when you saw states developing citizen groups like Arts South Dakota, Arts Wisconsin, Minnesota Citizens for the Arts. I mean, those kind of, that kind of collective voice, right? That we have power because we have collective voice. And that was, that really is powerful, but it also makes you successful because you bring with you not just one person saying, gee, you know, Mr. Mayor, I wish you would support the arts more and that would be nice for everyone. Yeah. But you come at it as an industry-wide, with some industry-wide strength and a group behind you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You can't be a leader without followers, right?
Right. Yeah.
So that's, it's relationships. It's all about relationships.
Maren, talk a little bit about the city of Sioux Falls, because as it continues to grow, and we're going to hear about Sculpture Walk in a little bit, we have Arc of Dreams, we have the Statue of David here, the Goodnight Theater Collective, the Washington Pavilion, the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra. Many of these organizations are based in the city, and it's growing. You want that innovation. You want those artists to feel free to create what they know needs to be created to innovate, to push the boundaries of what art can be. But yet you're also working in city government and navigating some of the realities of that. Tell me how you think about bringing yourself to that role.
Yeah.
Because that's complicated stuff.
It is. It is. And it's shifting really, you know, as we're talking about advocacy, it's really shifting the way that I am now advocating for the arts. You hear people talk about how slow moving government can be, but it takes dedication and it takes collaboration and working with the right people to kind of propel things forward. So as a city employee now, I really see this position as a facilitator between our city government and our arts community. And I've spent my first month on the job really meeting and connecting with as many artists in this community as I can to hear just their hopes, their dreams, the things they struggle with.
What are they telling you?
Well, so many things. I think as far as how they view city government, well, the thing that I'm hearing so much is that they desire transparency and process. How does the city make decisions about the arts, and how can they make those decisions while also listening to the needs of the community? And it's really exciting to see the city recognize that they need somebody who can speak that artistic language and bring the right people to the table in the arts community, so that we're going in a direction that's not just good for our city as a whole, but also particularly good for the artists that are adding to all of that economic success in our community. So trying to bridge, I think, that relationship between the community and the city is really a big focus.
Yeah. Janet, as an arts journalist for a number of years, I know that this is not always an easy conversation. We do not have time to unpack every arts controversy that we've already had or that we will have in the future. Mm-hmm. But people like me are watching, right?
Right.
What is the role of an arts advocate to say, we don't want watered down arts content. Mm-hmm. We want to create a First Amendment space where artists can do and say what they need to do and say. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there are fiscal realities. Mm-hmm. There are political realities. Mm-hmm. You've been through all of this and more. You've been a vibrant advocate for racial equity in the arts. Mm-hmm. And here we are again. You know, you mentioned the 90s. Here we are again in a world where talking about diversity and inclusion can be controversial in and of itself in the political space. Mm-hmm. And yet we know those disparities still exist. And we know something needs to be done about them. Help us sort through your experience, the moment that we're in now, and how we can come to the table and talk about things in a way that is a candid conversation without sending everybody scattering out the door.
Right. This is the dilemma that artists live with, is that I always think of art as the artists as bringing truth and beauty. And truth is not always beautiful, right? But somebody needs to tell that truth. Now, how that artist goes about telling that truth is where you can get into kind of political trouble. And that has to do with relationships and policies and procedures that are not either transparent or aren't fair or, inequitable. But the idea that artists can do whatever they want to is fine, is great, is what it should be. But when that artist decides to ask someone for money, then, and that money comes from taxpayers, then there is some restriction that has to be, that is just realistic. It doesn't have to be this way. Wouldn't have to be this way. Certainly European governments deal with this way differently than the United States does. But in our climate, one has to tread carefully, and one has to understand the policies of government. And that's why I'm so proud of Marin and so proud of the city for creating this position, because even the city of Sioux Falls, for all of the art it supports, has no real policies and procedures in place for that support. Mm-hmm. It's really tricky. And I think there's a big difference between art being censored and then also understanding who paid for that art and what message that sends. And then we have to understand that elected officials have to defend themselves on a daily basis. So, and it's our job to give them the tools that when they walk down the street and somebody says, why are you wasting all that money on that big art piece? And I mean, what's that politician's answer for that? Mm-hmm. Where does he get that answer or she get that answer? Well, they need to get that answer from us.
Yep.
So if we're not developing those relationships and we're not the resource for where that answer is going to come from, it's all kind of tied together. And it's a very complex. We have a very complex form of government, right?
Yeah.
And it's not easy for the art for artists. I mean, they're just artists who will never fit into that mold of being able to work for government because they don't want those strings.
Yeah.
God bless them, right? You know, because they will find patrons who will support their work.
Yeah.
There's no
question.
Keep
making things.
Keep making things.
I want to, this is what, I mean, and if you haven't figured out what this arts conference is about and the kinds of conversations that are going to happen over this weekend, I hope that gives you just a little spark to say, if you didn't sign up this year and make the trip, for whatever reason, maybe your resources are limited, plugging into these organizations might really open up some of that conversation for you. I want to pivot a little bit and talk about arts education. Because Maren, you come from Augustana, you've done some work there. I'm an Augustana graduate. Janet, Eugene Field A+ Elementary School in Sioux Falls would not exist as an arts school if it were not for you. My daughter went there, and this is my elementary school of choice. I love this place. Let's talk for a little bit about bringing up the next generation of artists, not just arts policymakers, not just arts journalists, but the artists themselves, the people who are on the stage, like Maren is in her theater work. It's an exciting thing. We'll start with you. Yeah. Talk about Augustana University and really recruiting, you know, freshmen, first-year students who are interested in the arts, and then helping funnel them into careers in the arts in South Dakota, so we have our next generation of musicians and performers and visual artists and photographers and dancers and filmmakers.
Yeah, I was really lucky to, I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and went to a high school that had just an unbelievable music education program. And that, I think if I hadn't had that experience, I wouldn't have maybe been brave enough to choose Augustana and say, I'm going to study music and I can do this. And this is what I want to do with my career. I don't know exactly what it will look like, but this has to be a part of my life. And I think as when I was recruiting young high school students, high school seniors to Augustana, it was such an interesting job, because you have students who are coming to Augustana and they're gonna major in pre-med, but the real reason they're coming to Augustana is that they want to study pre-med and they want to be as involved in the arts as they can be. And then on the flip side, students who are making that decision to go in all the way in the arts and figure it out as they go. And I talk to so many students about this, and I still talk about it, that I'm giving away my age, but I'm about to be 34 years old, and this career that I've taken with the city is one of the first careers that I've had that has really aligned with me so well, and it's because I really trusted my path as an artist and was patient and took every opportunity to learn as a fundraiser in nonprofit, and it led me to this career in the arts, and that was always the goal. And so I firmly believe that in our this generation right now that's coming up, the opportunities in the arts are, there's more than there's ever been. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're here at a conference where a big discussion point is art and economics. And that's an exciting thing to be talking about, because that's jobs. And it's this idea that the arts is bringing a successful economic landscape to our city. And so there will be jobs to help continue to make that happen. And I think, to Janet's point, you know, educating people about the value of art, people who are not artists, who need to see that art is contributing so much to our city, is a huge step in the right direction.
Janet, in your experience with arts education and the importance of it, and Randy Cohen and Andrew Reinarts do a great job about talking about, you know, just creativity and innovation, and, you know, if you're an engineer, if you're an architect, if you are a physician, if you're a lawyer. But what about the kids who are actually artists, the kids who say, I want to be on the stage? If you could address that for a minute, that would kind of fill out everything that we're talking about today.
Well, you know, you may not like my answer to that, actually, because I don't worry about those people.
Okay.
I don't. I mean, yeah, I think Maren said it. I mean, I said this to my kids when they both decided. I thought my kids, one was going to be a lawyer and the other one was going to be a physicist. And it ended up that she's a stage manager and he's a lighting designer. So for theater, you know, I mean, it's like, what? And I said, if you cannot not do it, then be an artist.
Yeah.
if you cannot not do it, and those people will always be with us, and there will be a path for them no matter where they go, no matter what little town they grew up in, no matter what. Dale Lamphere's story is one of the best, you know.
Yeah.
Of you know, and if you don't know Dale's story, write him a letter or call him up or ask him what it is, because it's truly phenomenal. And I worry about the other kids. I worry about not having enough arts education for so that a kid can say, oh, look, I got to perform in this event, and that gave me so much confidence that now I can get up and speak in front of the class, and that takes me into college where now I can be a, you know, I mean, you know, using the tools that the arts give you as a person.
Yeah.
And as an appreciator of art, well, we need more appreciators of art, right?
Yeah.
That that understand why artists are important, and have a value system about you know, what they like and what they don't like. And that's the nice thing about art, is that you can, you know, we all like something different, right? It's not.
Well, and when there's more appreciators of art, then there's more opportunity.
There's more opportunity for artists.
Yeah, yeah.
I like your answer very much.
Okay, thank you.
That's Janet Brown and Maren Engel, recorded at the South Dakota Arts Conference in June. Welcome back to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm your host, Lori Walsh. Now, if you have walked the streets of downtown Sioux Falls, you've probably noticed the sculptures. They adorn the sidewalks as part of the city's sculpture walk. Cameron Stahlheim is a Sioux Falls artist. His sculpture, Linger, won the 2023 People's Choice Award for Sculpture Walk. I shared a conversation with him at the 2024 State Arts Conference. We'll begin here by talking about his move into professional sculpting.
Well, I was pretty lucky. I grew up in a very creative household. My mother was an art teacher, and then my father was a craftsman. So we were always creating, always making. I was in the classroom exploring materials, exploring techniques. And for me, I think I started when I was young playing with Play-Doh, and then I got into Sculpey, you know, polymer clay. And I would make little presents for all my teachers every year and little sculptures. And then I actually got into prosthetic makeup in high school, and I really loved just changing the figure, changing the way you can, like, create a character.
Yeah.
And I actually went into USD with a theater major and a art minor, but I was so inspired by my sculpture professor at the time, I just decided to focus in on sculpture, and I've just really found a path for me.
Yeah, I like what Janet Brown said earlier in the hour about if you can't stop, you can't not make it, you can't not write, then you're a writer. You can't not sing on stage, then you're a performer. You can't not, you know, sculpt, you're a sculptor. Was there a moment for you where you were like, well, this is, I mean, or did you never not try? I mean, we all bring our own selves to art interviews, and I think I've spent so much of my time in life convincing myself that I shouldn't want to be a writer and a poet and a novelist, that I should want to do other things. But maybe that was not true for you at all. Were you just like, yeah, this is, I'm an artist.
This is me. This is who I am. This is who I have always been and always will be. It is so deep inside my soul and my heart that I need to create and express and tell the truth through aesthetics.
Yeah. What is your process like when you are making? What is it? Is it physically embodied? Do you have music on the background? Is it painful for you to create art? Is it freeing? Take us a little bit inside your head when you are working on a sculpture.
You know, I think there's a couple different avenues I take when I'm creating an artwork. A lot of times I'll get this really beautiful moment of inspiration, and then this excitement happens. And it's like you wake up and you're like, I have to work on this. And as I'm working on a sculpture, say, I think a lot of procedures, like technical procedures. Mm-hmm. And then along with that, as I'm working, a lot of the inspiration of meaning comes as I'm working on the technical aspects. And it kind of just goes back and forth, back and forth. And you're looking at a sculpture and you're like, what is this? Why am I making this? And then it's like a day later, it's like, oh, hello, this is what it means.
Okay.
And it kind of just goes and plays. And I listen to a lot of music. I sometimes listen to podcasts. It's just like a real creative dance.
When you are taking people around Sculpture Walk and you're stopped either by yourself, with friends who are in town, or on a tour like you're going to give this afternoon or early evening, and you stop in front of somebody else's sculpture, you don't know them, let's say, it's the first or second time you've looked at it, what are you looking for? How do you stop and be present with a piece of public art and say, what is this bringing up for me? Or what is this thing? Or what? How's this making me feel? Or what technical things helped put it together? What comes up first for you?
I think the first thing that I relate to when I look at a piece of public artwork is, what does it say about me as I'm looking at it? Mm. How do I relate to this? What is it saying about my life? And then what is it saying about society? What is it saying about community? What is it saying about procedures? And that's inspiration for me. That's when I look at it and something makes me stop in my tracks. It's, how does this beautiful piece of work make me feel? And how does it make me feel about myself?
Yeah. Your work as a sculptor, I'm not going to get that word right today, often surprises me in the best possible way. And sometimes it surprises me that I'm seeing it in Sioux Falls. And it opens up for me personally this idea that we can be creating here in the Midwest something that is moving the conversation forward for art in America, but it came from right here. That's why it surprises me. Sometimes the piece itself might surprise me and what you have done technically with it, but a lot of times I look and I say, oh, he's one of our artists, and that's not necessarily what I expected growing up in Sioux Falls. I expected it all to come from a bigger city.
You know, there are artists all among us.
Yeah.
And we are just dying to get our voice heard here. And I think it's getting better every year. I think it's getting better with the different galleries and the different sculptures going up. And we are really becoming a major community for the artwork. I think the challenge in the Midwest is finding people to support it financially, to support it through advocacy, and to support it through continuing our education with the arts. I think we're always a little bit behind on the coasts, just a little bit, but we're here and we're working and we have beautiful artists working here, and it's just a matter of getting seen.
Yeah. You are one of those artists that, again, my point of privilege, I've probably spent more time looking at your sculptures, every time I'm going to do it wrong, your sculptures, than maybe anybody else. They make me come back again and again and again. So that's saying something about me, your definition, about my curiosity, and I want to know more about this, you know, the mythology of what you're putting, or the folktale, fairy tale connections that you have. I find incredibly compelling to go back again and again and say, these ancient motifs.
Well, you know, for me, I really like to dabble between the reality versus fantasy.
Yeah.
And I think growing up in a creative household, growing up as a very creative child that was interested in mythology and fantasies, I really love the idea of bringing that into my adulthood. I just can't get away from it.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is like, you know, what's the difference between your dreams and your memories? Is there a difference? Sometimes there isn't. Sometimes there is. And you know, sometimes I'll wake up and I'll be like, what did I just experience? Because that's my reality.
Yeah.
That experience is just as real to me as experiencing this conversation right now.
Yeah, I love that.
That's Sioux Falls artist and sculptor Cameron Stahlheim. For more arts coverage, find us online, sdpb.org. That's our show for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us at SDPB, we thank you for listening.